This is the Left Pod.
Hello and welcome to the Learn English Football Podcast with your hosts, Tim and...
Tom. Hello, Tim. How are you?
I'm good, Tom. I'm good. It's been an up and down week of football. Lots of stuff going on. Have you caught any football today, Tom?
How are you first?
Sorry, before the football, how's the person?
Yeah, well, the two were kind of related because, I'm pretty good, although I feel a little bit hard done by. Hard done by is an expression means I feel an injustice was given because I watched West Ham play. They played Aston Villa this afternoon and we had two goals given by the referee. And then VAR stepped in and disallowed both of them. The one at the death of the play by Thomas Souček, it did look like it struck his arm. The one that was also given for handball against Antonio, I'm not so sure if it was chest or arm. I feel like when there's doubts, and there was definitely doubt, that goal should have stood. So that's my gripe over with. It was a 1-1 draw in the end with Aston Villa. And on the balance of play, you know, David Moyes parked the bus as usual. So I have to be grateful with a point, I suppose.
I love how much you love Moyes. Tom, I mean, it's not the first time West Ham have been done by VAR. I hear you were done harshly at the end of the Freiburg match away from home. But Tom, before we get into the meat of the topic, which is the Champions League and European football, I think we should take a moment to celebrate the fact that Almeria Football Club got their first win of the season today. They won 1-0 away at Las Palmas. I think it was a Baptistão goal. Oh, I saw it. It was a Baptistão goal. And there's Felipe Mel. He's come in. It's his first game as manager of Almeria. I think a lot of our English listeners will remember him from his time. He's very short time at West Bromwich Albion. But he's come back in. I've had Jesus photos being sent round with Pepe Mel's face superimposed. Good times are back in the south of Spain. And of all the doom and gloom that's been mentioned related to Almeria having the worst season in the history of European football, I'd just like to say Almeria are only a point behind the lowest placed team in the English league. And they're only 3 points behind second last Granada. So there's plenty to play for. Not survival, but definitely pride at stake. So congratulations to Almeria. Congratulations to Mr. Mel and his great arrival in the south of Spain, and just a nice feeling, Tom, not to be on the wrong end of the result again.
That's right. You don't want to have that record of supporting a club who's failed to win one league game for the whole of the season, which is 38 games. It's a very long season. So that's that monkey off the back, which is a nice idiom meaning, you know, they've got rid of that terrible... what would you say? How would you describe that?
Bad luck or something, which the monkey on your back is something bad that you can't kind of get rid of. Mm-hmm. Yes. In this case, it's been losing matches where I haven't been able to get rid of it. Tom, let's get into this podcast then. It's been a while since we've spoken. Life gets in the way sometimes, but we've had an exciting period of football. And to be honest, this is my favourite time of year for football because it seems to be every day of the week almost there's a good match. And there's nothing better than the Champions League. And we're going to run through the Champions League games, Tom, but we're going to do it in order of what I consider the most interesting games. So I'll let you guess what we're going to go for first, and I'll give you a clue. It hasn't been my heart which has decided it.
I see. So you're not going for Arsenal?
Not first, no.
I see. Well, in that case, are we talking about the Champions League games from 10 days ago or only the games from four days ago?
The 4 days ago, the results. It's pretty close to home. Also went to penalties.
I think it has to be the Atletico Inter Milan game then.
Correct. Absolutely correct. What a Champions League tie. I mean, you've got Inter Milan who are runaway leaders at the top of Serie A. They got to the final of the Champions League last season against an Atletico team who are having a bad season in Spain. They haven't been brilliant, but you know that this Atletico team, when it really matters in the Champions League under Diego Simeone and all of his know-how, are going to find that performance find the performance levels required when it matters. And this was just one of those. However, it was 1-0 in the first leg. in Italy. And to be honest, you have to say that Inter Milan could have won by more. I think it was Diego Simeone used all of his experience to manage to lose the game by 1-0, by 1-0, knowing that he could go back to the Wanda Metropolitano and get a performance out of his lads. But even saying that, Inter started well and they did get the first goal. It was a Di Marco goal. And it was a nice goal. It was a nice goal, and it wasn't against the run of play. Barella played it through to him on the left, or cut it back to him after Barella was put through on the left-hand side. And then when that goal went in, you're thinking 2-0. You're not really giving Atletico much hope. But, Tom, if you're going to take away the Messis and the Ronaldos of this world, I think Anton Griezmann probably has been the world's top performer in the 21st century on the football pitch. He's an absolute magician. I don't know, Tom, do you rate him as highly as that?
Well, you're kind of putting him into a default third place behind Messi and Ronaldo. He would certainly make my top 10, though. I do rate him very highly. If you remember in the World Cup in Qatar in 2022, we were waxing lyrical about the performances of Griezmann. He's able to deliver a very, very high performance on a very big stage. I mean, the important games. They really notice when he's out with injury. The team is not the same without him. And you can see that even late in the game, he's still got that quality. He's able to get his head up and just play the perfect pass or execute the perfect shot when the time comes, when the moment arrives.
Yeah, I think he's just one of these players. I mean, if you look at Atletico without him, they look almost like workmanlike. They seem to have zero creativity. But when he's in that side, he seems to get the best out of other players and not just get the best out of them, give the other players the belief to play a more creative style of football. Anyway, he got the goal. It was a bit fortuitous. It was poorly cleared by the Inter Milan defence, but it was a real changing of a turning point in the game because the stadium woke up. And I've been in the Metropolitano on a European night, and when it gets going, it's an incredible place. Lots of cheering, lots of singing, and Atletico grew in confidence. But I did think, Tom, that it was strange from Inter Milan because, I mean, they were still in the game. They were still in the game, and they weren't pushing on as much as I thought they would. They were creating chances on the counter attack. They missed a couple of real sitters, I have to say. I don't know if I can't remember if the misses were before the Depay goal or after the Depay goal. So let's talk about Depay first. What an impact sub he's had! He's always been a player with great quality. He showed it at Ajax, Manchester United, and Barcelona, but he's lacked consistency over the years. But this was one of those days. It was his day. He came on the pitch very shortly after coming on. He hit the post. And then again, shortly after that, a low ball was played across from the left and he got on the end of it. And it was a good save from the goalkeeper, but he was looking dangerous. And then the goal came, Tom. And it was a wonderful goal, an absolutely wonderful goal. Depay was on the edge of the box. He got a ball into his feet from Koke and he used the first touch to he knew where the space was and the first touch went into that space and he drilled it back across the goalkeeper into the far left corner. It was a great goal. And I mean, it was one of those goals that if when you receive the ball, you're thinking about where your teammates are, you don't score that goal. It's a selfish striker's goal, the kind of goal I really like to see. And even then, it was all level. And then the Inter Milan misses, Tom. I mean, there were a few of them. It was Thuram missed one.
Barella missed
one.
Yeah,
Barella missed one as well.
There was another one late on as well. Yes, I forget. But I did make a note that Lautaro Martinez was wonderful in that role of bringing his
creating
chances. That's right. He was timing his passes perfectly to create chances for his teammates. I think Marcus Thuram was the worst miss of the ones, but they really should have been taken and put Inter back. Giving them a cushion actually, because I think two of those chances came before Depay had scored his goal. So yes, that really cost them those misses on the counter-attack.
Yeah, and to be honest, Inter again, the reason I think it was strange tactics is because at the beginning of the game in Madrid and also throughout the game in Italy, you got the feeling that in terms of quality and tactical kind of ability to move the ball and to move the Atletico defence around, you felt that Inter were capable of operating at a higher level. But they did seem to go back to that kind of default Italian football mentality, kind of we've got the lead, we're in the game, we're going to defend what we've got. And I think it cost them so much so that they could have lost the game in normal time. I mean, Riquelme ran in late on in the match. I think it was in the 89th minute, a ball from Griezmann. And he hammered it over the bar, but it was from 8 yards out. He should have scored. And then it went to penalties. I mean, a stoppage, extra time was a bit to and fro. But the penalties, Tom, I mean, I don't know if you've seen any of the slow-mo pictures of the penalties, but it does look like the ball moves, certainly for the Lautaro Martinez penalty. He plants his foot, and to plant your foot means to kind of step on the ground in such a way that that foot's going to take all of your weight. And he plants his foot on the ground, and the grass under the ball just shifts to the right, and the ball moves. And I think it must be one of those modern pitches which has got a kind of layer of a very thin layer of grass on top of the soil, poor quality roots in the grass, and it allows a kind of movement. So I do feel a bit hard. It's a bit harsh on Lautaro Martinez, who, as you say, was the creative genius of this Inter Milan side. What did you make of it all?
I thought you touched on it earlier when the Metropolitano Stadium wakes up. I felt that the home crowd really made a difference. If that same fixture had happened in the San Siro and had gone to penalties, I'd have expected a different result. But I think that the atmosphere, that the crowd really played their part, just making it a bit more pressure on Inter Milan. But the quality of their penalties, their misses were quite poor. Maybe they were unlucky with the ground. I haven't seen that closely. One point I would like to make, though, I liked seeing all the experience out there on the field. I'm guessing the average age out there must be about over 30 when you're looking at players like Alexis Sanchez coming on for Mkhitaryan at Inter Milan and Acerbi coming on 36 or 37 years old. There was a lot of experience out there. Koke, who seems like we've been watching him for a decade now, and credit to Depay for that true striker's finish, but I also want to give equal credit to Koke for the pass through to him. It was a very quick pass, and it was played perfectly at the perfect angle for Depay to run onto. It looked like a short pass, but to execute it correctly and to have the vision, I thought it was a fantastic assist for that goal.
Yeah, it really had to be perfect, didn't it?
Yes.
So how far can this Atleti side go? I mean, we're going to talk about the draw later. They've got one of the easier draws, I'd say. I think, though, they will get found out against a team that can move the ball quickly, confidently, and not kind of be intimidated by that atmosphere. I do kind of think the circumstances played into Atletico's hands a bit. I think Inter kind of sacrificing possession and also the wonderful atmosphere and the luck in the lead up to the Griezmann goal all came together to give them a little bit of help.
I agree. I would agree with you. They won't be favourites against Borussia Dortmund. I've talked before about the attacking quality that Dortmund have. To give you an idea, against PSV, they started with Daniel Malin, Julius Brandt and Jadon Sancho behind Füllkrug. And then in the second half, they were able to substitute those three players for Nemeja, Adeyemi and Royce to come on. So I feel like they're so rich in attacking depth, it's going to be a real challenge for Atletico to be able to contain them. But as we'll come on to, I think it's still quite an even match. I wouldn't say it's a major advantage for Dortmund in that one. I expect it's fairly even with the bookmakers on who's the favourite, who's the underdog.
Yeah, regardless of who's favourite in any match, including Atletico Madrid, you just wouldn't want to play them over 180 minutes in European football. You know you're going to have to really suffer to find a way to be successful. Anyway, moving on, Tom. Arsenal against Porto. Arsenal in the Champions League last 16 for the first time in 6-7 years since the days of Arsene Wenger.
Congratulations, by the way.
Heavy favourites, thank you. Heavy favourites going into the tie. And the match in Porto away a couple of weeks ago did go according to plan until the 92nd minute. But I think Porto need to be given a lot of credit. I think Arsenal shouldn't have been such heavy favourites going into this match. There's lots of different ways to play football. There isn't one style which is better than another style. It's all about how well you perform, the tactic that you've chosen on any given day. And I think Porto at home were really difficult to break down. They knew how to slow the game down. They knew how to trick the referee. They knew how to stop Arsenal building any momentum. And the goal, okay, you could say it was against the run of play, but under those circumstances, if you've stopped the opposition operating, you're going to make the opposition feel a little bit uncomfortable, and your chance will come in a game. And they took their chance. So it was 1-0 going to London. And that basically set the Porto tactics for them, really. At the end of the first leg, there had been a bit of bad blood between Conceição, the Porto manager, and Mikel Arteta. Mikel Arteta had said that they were only there to foul and to trick the referee, and Conceição said that no, they were there to win. And so that kind of set the context for the second match. It was a passionate night at the Emirates Stadium, and to be honest, Arsenal started just as all the Arsenal fans wanted us to start. A lot of Arsenal fans before the match were worried that it would be 0-0 at halftime, that we would be looking for that equaliser late into the match. And then really you're playing into the hands of the likes of Pepe and things like that. But we started very well. It was a lovely goal. Odegaard threaded the ball through to Trossard. And when that goal went in, you're thinking, okay, this could be a question of how many Arsenal are going to score and how quickly. But it didn't happen. And it kind of didn't happen because really that didn't change the game plan for Porto. They still needed to defend. They were still looking for a goal on the counter-attack. So Porto were quite comfortable just to sit back. And Arsenal got frustrated. And when Arsenal got frustrated, they got sloppy. To be sloppy, Tom, is not to be careful, not to be precise. We were sloppy in our passing in the second half. And I actually thought Porto in the second half, certainly in the last 20 minutes, 30 minutes of the game, I thought they looked the more dangerous of the two sides. I was not feeling confident. All of my nails were being bitten. We didn't seem to be able to up the pace. Tom, I was looking at it very much from a subjective point of view. You were looking at it from the outside. What did you think of the game?
I thought they were two very, very well-matched teams. Even though, you know, we're all very familiar with Arsenal and the Premier League, and Arsenal undoubtedly have a deeper, richer squad. Actually, out there on the field over the 180 minutes or 210 minutes with extra time, the game was incredibly well balanced. You know, this Portugal team, you say it's Portuguese, actually five of the players are Brazilian out there. I thought the defensive line was very, very strong. Wendell, Otavio, Pepe, João, Mario, with Diogo Costa in goal. Pepe grew into the game. He seemed to thrive on the pressure. As the game went into extra time, he became, for me, the most dominant player out there, really, really asserting himself. His positioning, his judgment seemed to get better and better as the game went on.
And his attitude. The way he celebrates making a tackle. I love that, I must say.
That's right. And the other Pepe, who was in their number 10 role, was also fantastic, carrying the ball forward, very two-footed, slaloming through the Arsenal midfield. If Porto had their wingers playing better, Galeno and Conceição, the son of the manager, were both a bit off form, and I felt that they were well controlled by the Arsenal defence, who I have to say also were as impressive as ever. But it just meant that both teams had chances, but when the game went to extra time after 90 minutes, you could feel that neither team was sure of themselves enough. They didn't feel confident enough that they were really going to push forward and take any risks. So it always felt like penalties was coming. And when the penalties did come, Arsenal took theirs very well. Porto, not quite so well. And there's your result.
Yeah, they really were great penalties from the Arsenal boys. I mean, Yeah, I mean, they scored all of them. And David Raya, of course, I think he saved, you could say, you could argue he saved two. I think he definitely saved one. I don't 100% sure if the, was it the Wendell penalty or the, I can't remember which one that he might have touched onto the post. I'm not sure.
Yes, there was definitely a fingertip. It went onto the post and then onto his back and bounced wide, which is very nice for him because often they bounce back into the goal off the goalkeeper's back.
Yeah, we've definitely seen that before. Certainly on computer games, if nothing else. No, but I mean, to step up and you've got, you know, Bukayo Saka taking his first penalty in a penalty shootout since he missed for England. So it was a high pressure situation. Your boy Declan Rice scored, no doubt about it, powered it down the middle. But I mean, you have to say the David Raya debate is now well and truly put to bed. He is definitely our number one goalkeeper. In fact, he was suspended. He couldn't play midweek because we played Brentford. Ramsdale came back in and made a real howler of an error. And then 3 days later, David Raya wins you the penalty shootout. So I think that is a finished conversation. But Tom, I think this was the match where Arsenal fans' expectations were really kind of lowered in terms of how far we can go in the competition. I think going into the match, Arsenal fans considered that Real Madrid and City were the two favourites. But the logic is, well, we're competing with City in the league. We beat them the last time we played them in the league. So therefore, we're as good as City. And then when you come up against someone with so much European experience and pedigree like a Porto, with players like Pepe, you realise that you can't just compare things so simply. And I think Arsenal fans now, we'd probably be happy just not to get absolutely destroyed by Bayern Munich, considering what's happened to us in the past. Tom, they're the Champions League matches I really got my kind of focused on every second of the match. But another match that was exciting, I certainly dipped in and out of the second leg, was Real Madrid against Leipzig. I don't know how much of the match you saw, but it was a very exciting match, and there were two players that really stood out for me.
Yes, I think you're going to say Xabi Simons for Leipzig was one of them. He stood out for me as well. Wonderful balance, wonderful ability to turn and just cause trouble through that midfield in tight spaces. Yeah.
Carry the ball forward in the centre of the park. There aren't many players who do that nowadays. Normally, the people are scared of not having the space.
Mm-hmm. And the other player, well, it was a bit of an off night for Real Madrid, so I don't know who the other player
is. No, it was also a Leipzig player.
Oh, you'll have to tell me.
I thought Dani Olmo was very good. I always like him when I watch him. I think he's always much better for Leipzig than he is for Spain for some reason. I think for Leipzig, they trust him to take the shot. They trust him to lose possession a bit more than the Spanish national team maybe do. But he was very close to stealing the game in the last minute, a looping. He controlled the ball at the far post. I think it was off a corner, off a cross, and he controlled it on his chest, and before the ball had gone down to hit the ground, he volleyed it over and it literally clipped to the top of the crossbar. But I tell you what, I've spoken to a lot of Real Madrid fans who are not happy with the performance. They consider Leipzig to be really unlucky in that tie. And again, another match that made kind of a lot of Real Madrid fans reassess their expectations about how deep they can go. I don't know how much of Madrid you've seen, but do you think Madrid can go all the way, or is it a stupid question to question Madrid?
They've still got that pedigree, that quality, that experience of winning those tournaments. But actually, you know, a lot of those players, Cruz has been starting, Modric hasn't. They've decided that Tchouaméni is going to be, or Camavinga is going to be the first choice in midfield above Modric. But I think when it comes to the big games, they need to put their faith in the players who have done it for them. So if Modric is fit, for me, he starts and he just brings you so much more experience. Otherwise, I feel that team is perhaps they've got some experience, but there's also some vulnerabilities there, perhaps. So they're not the same quality as the team that won the Champions League a couple of years ago. I think there's they've got the potential, but it's not quite what they used to be, into my mind.
Yeah, I'm going to slightly disagree with you, because I agree that maybe they don't have the the Casemiros, the Ramoses, the Benzemas they did a few years ago, and also the players who are still there aren't guaranteed starters, as you mentioned. But I kind of think with Real Madrid, the experience exists in the club. It's kind of like a mentality which exists in the dressing room, and that's the secret behind the success of Real Madrid. It's kind of, it doesn't matter which names are on the pitch, the mentality lives on. But what I do think is an issue, if we go back to the season, they won it a couple of seasons ago, and if you think of all those games where they were really under the cosh, which means receiving pressure, and you think that Benzema, for example, I can remember a looping header he scored against the run of play. I can remember another game where he turned the game with two moments of absolute genius, and you're thinking that José Lu as the striker isn't going to be that clinical. So I do wonder, in difficult games where they really need a clinical goal scorer, if that's why where they might come up short. But Tom, we're already kind of talking about prospects, but you said you caught some of PSV against Borussia Dortmund. I must admit, I didn't watch any of this match, any of either tie. But it was I think it was 1-1, or was it 2-2 in Holland? It was 1-1, wasn't it?
Yes, it was 1-1, and it was 2-0 in Dortmund. Actually, I didn't catch that game. I was watching the Atletico Inter game, so I've only seen the goals from that. But I was flicking over a bit, but it was already comfortable. Borussia took the lead with a Sancho goal after 3 minutes. And while they were playing at home, you just felt like PSV didn't have the weapons that were really going to, trouble them too much. So I was watching the Athletic game, but they do now have that set up in the quarterfinals, Atletico against Borussia Dortmund. And I think it's going to be, for me, it's one of the most difficult clashes to call the result of. I know we've also got Real Madrid against Manchester City, the two favourites taking on each other. So that's actually a real joy for the other six clubs, because it means that one of those big guns is definitely getting eliminated. But I feel like this is one of the strongest Champions League's quarterfinal draws we've had for a long time. I also want to mention Barcelona, who seem to have found a bit of form. They only drew in Napoli, but they were, according to all accounts, the superior side. And then they won 3-1 at home. They were playing a 17-year-old at centre-back. I think Kubasi, Pau Kubasi is his name. And he had a great game showing.
He was man of the match. He was man of the match. Wow, incredible.
Wow.
Yeah.
So Barcelona, you wonder, could this be the year where Barcelona put in a good charge for the silverware again? Who's to say? Who have they got in the next round?
Barcelona have got Paris Saint-Germain.
Okay.
You have to say it was nice for Xavi, he's been under a lot of criticism recently. He's kind of had his hand forced, and he's resigned. Well, he's said that he's going to resign at the end of the season because of the mounting pressure. And you do feel that if he'd have been embarrassed against Napoli, that actually he might have been forced out before the end of the season. You could see the way he celebrated at the end of the match, how much it meant to him. But you've got to say, this is probably the end of an era for this Napoli side. You would imagine this Napoli side will be largely dismantled at the end of the season, with people definitely sniffing around the main man up top, Osimhen. I think there's Chelsea, Liverpool, Arsenal, Paris Saint-Germain, all interested. And he's got a clause, I think it's £110 million. Somebody's going to be willing to pay that. I know it sounds like a lot of money, but it's really not in football anymore. So I think it's a sad state, because they did so well to win the league last season, but I think it's come to the end. And Barcelona, I think this is the good thing about this Barcelona side. They have kind of, they're betting on youth. They haven't just got Kubasi. They've got, of course, Yamal, who's I think he's still 16, and he's played.
Wow.
I think he's started 9 or 10 games for Barcelona this season. Still 16 years old. Incredible. So anything's possible. Anything's possible. But I don't see this Barcelona
side. One of the goal
going.
Scorers as well, Fermin Lopez, scored the first goal, 20 years old. So they're constantly bringing talent through their squad, and the talent is constantly performing. We look at this Barcelona team, we're looking for Pedri on the team sheet or Gabi, but they can make do just fine without them. They've got talent, so much talent coming through their academy.
Yeah. So moving on then, Tom, let's look at the quarterfinals. As you were saying, it is a very difficult draw. Normally at the quarterfinals, you can expect at least one easier tie, at least one easier team. And that was what I was looking for when I was watching the draw live on Friday. But then I quickly realized that easy match wasn't going to come. So first up, we've got Arsenal-Bayern Munich. I don't think Arsenal have ever beaten Bayern Munich in our history. The last time we played them, I was actually at the match at the Allianz Arena. Very disappointing night. But an amazing stadium and an amazing city and a great fan base, so fair play to them. Bayern will be without fans for the first leg at the Emirates Stadium because of crowd trouble in their match against Lazio. And let's not forget, this isn't the strongest Bayern side. They're 10 points off the top in the Bundesliga. They also, of course, they've got the goals of Harry Kane, but they've also got Eric Dier. And we know Dier by name, Dier by nature. To be Dier as an adjective means to be very, very, very poor quality. Obviously, I'm showing my Arsenal bias there. But, you know, they've got Thomas Tuchel, who's come in. He's already been shown the door. So I don't think it's the same old Bayern as always. But all I think that does is change things from a definite Bayern win to a likely Bayern win. I think Arsenal have got the capabilities, but I think Bayern have got too much quality and too much experience. What do you think, Tom?
Yeah, I'd agree with you there. You know, this Bayern team, you've got players like Kimmich, Goretzka, Thomas Müller, Leroy Sané, Musiala, Harry Kane up front. There's a bit too much. Manuel Neuer still going strong in goal for them. So a bit too much experience and quality. But I think Arsenal will give them a very good game. And, you know, Bayern's form has not been that great, certainly in the league recently. So it might not be such a bad time. I've heard people expressing frustration about their style of play recently. Maybe an inability to penetrate, to create lots of chances for Harry Kane. So you might have a chance, but they will be the favourites.
Yeah. Moving on, I think the standout match, of course, the two favourites is Real Madrid City. I think both sides are actually a little bit weaker than they were last season. I think Manchester City are missing Gundogan, are missing Mahrez. They haven't quite replaced them. They're not with the same quality anyway. I don't think Kovacic is anywhere near as good as Gundogan. But of course, they've got Phil Foden on form. But I think Haaland isn't the same Haaland that we saw last season so far. But then as for the reason we've just mentioned, I think Real Madrid are slightly weaker as well. I think this is a toss the coin one, Tom. I mean, it really is to go out, to stick your neck out and say, I really think City are going to win, or I really think Real Madrid are going to win. I think it's a fool's game. But I'm a fool, Tom, so I'm going to back City.
You know what? I'll do the same. I'm with City on this one as well. I think, you know, you're right that Real Madrid, the history in the Champions League, it's there within the club. And it comes through, especially when the team play at home at the Bernabeu. But this Manchester City squad, I think they showed themselves to be superior last year. And even with the changes, I still think that, changes to both clubs, Manchester City have just a nose in front in that one.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. It's going to be a great match. There's no doubt about that. Moving on to Paris Saint-Germain against Barcelona. Of course, you've got Luis Enrique going back to Barcelona as Paris Saint-Germain manager. You've got slight upheaval or changes regarding Mbappe. I've noticed Mbappe has actually been benched recently by Luis Enrique, who's justified it, saying we're going to have to get used to playing without Kylian Mbappe sooner or later, so we may as well start practicing now. But I do think this Paris Saint-Germain side are better than I think they've ever been. I think they move the ball in the centre of the park much better. I think it's Vitinha. Is it Vitinha they've got
Vitinha
in the centre?
Yes.
Guys. I think he's a difference maker. And obviously, they've got Mbappe. I think Dembele's been playing well for them as well. And I think Barcelona, although they've got quality, I think you've seen it against Real Madrid this season, when they come up against a side who's got that intensity to really play quality, high intensity football, I don't think they can keep up at the top level. Do you more or less agree?
I do. You know, football's often a game of moments at the highest level, and I trust Kylian Mbappe and his teammates to produce in more moments that make a difference in against Barcelona than Barcelona. Barcelona have a wonderful tactical style of playing, but perhaps their inexperience will tell at those crucial times in the game. So, yeah, Paris Saint-Germain to edge it, yes.
Okay. And Tom, the interesting thing about this last one we're going to talk about is I think we're actually going to disagree, because I think you mentioned earlier that Dortmund would be favourites going into this match against Atletico. Mm-hmm. And I definitely wouldn't have them down as favourites.
Uh-huh.
I do accept they've got some attacking talent, but I mean, the doggedness of a Diego Simeone side, I think you really need to be like, I think to beat Atletico, you need to make Atletico feel like the small club. Like Real Madrid do to them, like you know, when they come up against star-studded sides, I think they do have an inferiority complex. But when you don't have that situation, I think they back themselves to find a way to win against any tactic out there, just because of their refusal to lose and their fight and just their belief in themselves. The typical things that we all associate with Diego Simeone. So why is it that you think Dortmund are going to get the better of this tie?
I agree with all the points you made. In fact, if you remember when we were doing our predictions for the last 16, I think I made those arguments while you backed Inter in that fixture. So
football is a short memory world, Tom. You know that.
Yeah. So I agree with what you're saying. Atletico are very hard to beat. But ever since Dortmund went to Newcastle United, who were very much in form, and they'd beaten Paris Saint-Germain at home at St. James's Park, and Dortmund stopped them, and they were so fluid, breaking through the Newcastle midfield, through the middle of the park. I loved their 1-2 exchanges of football. They seemed to have a very a great understanding in their attacking style of play. So I still stay with that. I like their defence as well. They've got Madsen on loan from Chelsea at left back. They're playing Süle, who's a centre back, playing him at right back, which is something that Pep Guardiola likes to do, put his centre backs out as full backs. They've got so much experience in defence as well. So I just think Dortmund have enough. I've just got a feeling, let's just say it this way, I've got a feeling about them this year, Tim.
Okay. Well, they do say feelings are usually right. So let's see. Tom, it's been, I think that's all the European football we've got to cover today.
The only thing I will just say as a West Ham fan, for any of our listeners who are also West Ham fans.
Was it a 5-0 victory against Freiburg?
There was a 5-0 victory against Freiburg. It puts us in the quarterfinals of the Europa League against Bayer Leverkusen. So we've got a very tough tie. I was hoping for someone like Atalanta, but Liverpool got lucky with that draw. But I did watch their second half of the Bayer Leverkusen-Karabag game. And while Bayer Leverkusen are extremely dangerous with Frimpong on the right, he got the Karabag defender sent off for a red card for shirt pulling, then scored a crucial equalising goal. He's going to be a handful for Emerson. If he can control him, I don't know. But I see also some vulnerabilities in the Bayer Leverkusen team. They were beaten on the counter-attack for a goal down their left flank. The second Karabag goal was a lovely goal taken by their Brazilian striker. So I just think that it could be a more even game. West Ham might have a chance against Leverkusen. But let's be honest, Tim, you look at that draw, some very good teams. AC Milan and Roma are going against each other. Liverpool have to be the favourites, don't they, in that tournament?
Yeah, I think they are. I'd like to see West Ham do well, because I've seen a lot of people see it sell the match as kind of like old-fashioned British manager David Moyes against modern continental Xavi Alonso. And I don't think football's that easy to divide. I think there's a lot more crossover than a lot of people like to believe. So I'd like to see the old traditional agricultural football come out on top. But yes, we've got an international break now, Tom. Yeah, we've got some friendlies coming up, some last minute preparations before the European Championships. So, yeah, I think these friendlies are a bit more exciting than some of the ones that are kind of like 2 years away from a tournament. So something to look forward to. And Tom, I'll be actually at Brazil, Spain in a couple of weeks. I'm going up to the Bernabeu. I've always dreamt about seeing the Brazilian yellow on the pitch, and they're coming to Madrid. So I thought, why not?
Wonderful.
Why not indeed? Yes. So, Tom, thanks to all of our listeners. Thanks to you. And we'll see you next time.
See you next time. Thank you very much to all our listeners. Thank you, Tim. Have a good time in Madrid next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.